Say, where in hell's Susie? She'll find out when Fauna says 3 o'clock, she means 3 o'clock. Gee, Fauna's a funny name. Mabel said, her name used to be Flora. What is a fauna, anyway? I never knew nobody named that. Oh, it's like a baby deer, said Becky. I don't think Susie'll be here long. She's kind of nuts, got a nuts look in her eye. Goes out walking. Mabel said, well, it's 2 minutes to 3. Susie better get here. On the stroke of 3, a door opened, and Fauna came in from her bedroom. A silver headband was tied around her orange hair, and it made her look like a certain social leader recently deceased. Fauna had the elegance found only in the drawing rooms of the old rich and in the haute monde brothels. She was heavy, but she moved with light, deft steps. She carried a large basket. "Where's Susie?" she asked. "I don't know," said Mabel. "Well, look in her room." Mabel went out. Fauna moved to the Parcheesi board. "Somebody's been shooting craps with the Parcheesi dice," she said. "How'd you know?" Becky asked. "There's 2 bucks in the corner bucket. I don't want gambling in the ready room. If a young lady wants to run a few passes with a customer, that's different, but I don't want to find no more pencil marks on the lump sugar either. Gambling's a vice. I knew many a good hooker with a future that's throwed it away on games of chance."
"Hell, Fauna, you play poker," said Becky.
"Poker ain't a game of chance," said Fauna. "And you watch your language, Becky. Vulgarity gives a hook shop a bad name." She took a linen tablecloth from her basket and spread it over the Parcheesi board. Then she laid out a napkin, a plate, wine glasses, and a heap of flat silver. Mabel and Susie came in. Fauna said, "I don't like my young ladies to be late." She took a teacher's pointer from her basket. "Now, what young lady wants to be first?" Agnes said, "I'll do her."
"You done it yesterday," said Mabel. "God damn it, it's my turn."
Fauna said sternly, "Young ladies, suppose some nice dumb young fellow was to hear you. Now, Mabel..." She indicated the items on the tablecloth with the pointer, and Mabel began, like a child, reciting poetry. "Oyster fork, salad fork, fish fork, roast fork, savory fork, dessert fork, plate, dessert knife, savory knife, roast knife, fish knife."
"Good," said Fauna. "Now here."
And Mabel went on.
"Water,
white wine,
claret, burgundy,
port,
brandy."
"Perfect," said Fauna. "Which side does the salad go on?"
"Left side, so you can get your sleeve in the gravy."
Fauna was deeply gratified. "By God, that's good. I wouldn't be surprised if Mabel wasn't one of them stars before too long." She indicated the gold stars on the wall.
"What are they?" Susie asked.
Fauna said proudly, "Every one of them stars represents a young lady from the Bear Flag that married and married well. That first star's got 4 kids and her husband's manager of an A&P. Third from the end is president of the Salinas Forward and Upward Club and held the tree on Arbor Day. Next star is high up in the watch and ward, sings alto in the Episcopal Church in San Jose. My young ladies go places. Now, Susie?"
"Huh?
What's that?"
"That funny kind of fork?"
"What's it for?"
"I don't know."
"Cooperate, Susie. What do you eat with it?"
Susie mused. "You couldn't get much mashed potatoes on it. Pickles, maybe?" It's a clam fork, said Fauna. Now say it. Clam fork.
Susie said vehemently, I wouldn't eat a clam if you was to give me a scoop shovel.
What a mug, said Agnes.
Susie turned on her. I ain't no mug. Mabel cried, double negative, double negative.
What are you talking about? Said Susie.
Mabel said, when you say you ain't no mug, that means you're a mug.
Susie started for her. Who's a mug?
Fauna bellowed, if certain young ladies don't come to order, they're going to get a paste in the puss. Now, posture. Where's the books?
Agnes said, I think Joe Elegant's reading them.
Damn it, said Fauna. I picked them books special so's nobody'd take them. What's he reading them for? Breeder's Journal, California Civil Code, and a novel by Sterling North? What the hell is there to read?
Well, we'll just have to use the basket, I guess. Agnes, put the basket on your head.
Fauna inspected her.
Now look here, young ladies, she said. Just because you got your ankles together and your hips flying forward, that don't necessarily mean posture. Agnes, tuck in your butt. Posture's a state of mind. Real posture is when a young lady's flat on her ass and still looks like she got books on her head.
There came a knock on the door, and Joe Elegant handed Fauna a note. She read it and sighed with pleasure.
That Mac, she said. What a gent. I guess he'd drain the embalming fluid off his dead grandma, but he'd do it nice.
Is his grandma dead?
Agnes asked.
Who knows? Said Fauna. Listen to this, young ladies. Mac and the boys request the pleasure of your company at their joint tomorrow aft to drink a slug of good stuff and talk about something important. Bring the girls, RSVP.
Fauna paused. He could have yelled outside the window, but not Mac. He requests the pleasure of our company. She sighed. What a gent. If he wasn't such a bum, I'd aim one of you young ladies at him.
Agnes asked, What's the matter with Mac's grandma?
I don't even know he's got a grandma, said Fauna. Now, when we go over there tomorrow, you young ladies keep your trap shut and just listen.
She mused. Something important.
Well, it might be like Mac needs $20, so just keep your heads shut and let me do the thinking.
Suddenly, Fauna beat her forehead with the heel of her hand.
I nearly forgot! Joe Elegant baked a great big goddamn cake. Susie, you take 4 cold cans of beer and that cake and go over and give them to Doc to cheer him up.
Okay, said Susie, but it'll probably molt in his stomach.
His stomach ain't none of your business, said Fauna.
And when Susie had gone, Fauna said, I wished I could stick up a star for that kid. She don't hardly pull her own weight here.
Chapter 16. The Little Flowers of St. Mac. Doc laid 10 big starfish out on a shelf, and he set up a line of 8 glass dishes half-filled with seawater. Although he was inclined to carelessness in his living arrangements, his laboratory technique was immaculate. The making of the embryo series gave him pleasure. He had done it hundreds of times before, and he felt a safety in the known thing. No speculation here. He did certain things, and certain other things followed. There's comfort in routine. His old life came back to him. A plateau of contentment with small peaks of excitement, but none of the jagged pain of original thinking, none of the loneliness of invention. His phonograph played softly, played the safe and certain fugues of Bach, clear as equations. As he worked, a benign feeling came over him. He liked himself again as he once had, liked himself as a person the way he might like anyone else. The self-hatred which poisons so many people and which had been irritating him was gone for the time.
The top voice of his mind sang peacefulness and order, and the raucous middle voice was gentle. It mumbled and snarled, but it could not be heard. The lowest voice of all was silent, dreaming of a warm, safe sea. The rattlesnakes in their wire cage suddenly lifted their heads, felt the air with their forked tongues, and then all four set up a dry, buzzing rattle. Doc looked up from his work as Mac came in. Mac glanced at the cage. "Them new snakes ain't got used to me yet," he said. "Takes a little time," said Doc. "You haven't been here much." "Didn't feel no welcome here," said Mac. "I'm sorry, Mac. I guess I've been off my feed. I'll try to do better." "You going to let up on them devilfish?" "I don't know." "They was making you sick." Doc laughed. "It wasn't the octopi. I guess it was trying to think. I'd got out of the habit."
"I never got the habit," said Mac.
"That's not true," said Doc. "I never knew anyone who devoted more loving thought to Minscule."
"I never even heard of them," said Mac.
"Say, Doc, what do you think of the Patron, your honest spit-in-the-lake opinion?"
"I don't think I understand him. We're kind of different." "You ain't kidding," said Mac.
"He ain't honest."
Doc said, "I'd call that expert testimony."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean you bring some experience to bear."
"Oh, I know what you mean," said Mac earnestly. "But you search your heart, Doc, and see if I ain't dishonest in a kind of honest way. I don't really fool nobody, not even myself. And there's another thing. I know when I'm doing it. Joseph and Mary can't tell the difference."
"I think that might be true," said Doc.
"What I'm wondering is, well, I don't think the Patron wants any trouble around here, do you?"
"Nobody wants any trouble."
"He's got a stake here," Mac went on. "If the whole row took a scunner to him, why, he just couldn't take that chance, don't you think?"
"If I knew what you were talking about, it might help," said Doc.
"I'm just trying to figure something," said Mac.
"Well, if you mean that the Patron is in a kind of sensitive position..."
"That's what I do mean," said Mac. "He can't afford to have no enemies."
"Nobody wants enemies," said Doc.
"I know, but he could get his ass in a sling. He got a business, and he's got property."
"I see what you mean," said Doc. "You're going to pressure him, and you want to know what he'll do. What are you going to try to take away from him, Mac?"
"I'm just thinking," said Mac.
"I never knew you to think idly. When you think, somebody gets hurt."
"I never hurt nobody, Doc."
"Well, not bad. I will say your bite is not deadly."
Mac was uneasy. He had not intended the conversation to turn to him. He changed the subject.
"Say, Doc, did you hear? The whole country club took a loyalty oath on the 18th green. Whitey number 2 was caddying. Them members all took off their hats and swore they would not destroy the U.S. government."
"I'm glad," said Doc. "I was worried."
"Did the caddies take the oath, too?"
"Some of them did, but not Whitey. He's kind of an idealist, you might say. He says if he gets an idea to burn down the Capitol, he don't want no perjury rap to stand in his way. They won't let him caddy no more."
"Does he want to burn down the Capitol?" Doc asked.
"Well, no. He says he don't want to now, but he don't know what he'll want to do next month. He gives us quite a talk about it. Says he was a Marine, went through a lot of fighting for the country. Figures he's got a kind of personal interest. He don't want nobody to tell him what to do."
Doc laughed.
"So he can't carry golf clubs anymore because of his ideals."
"They say he's a security risk," said Mac.
Whitey claims he ain't got good enough memory to be a security risk. Besides, they don't talk about nothing out there on the golf course except money and dames.
Doc said, heroes always get punished at first.
Speaking of dames, Doc.
Let's, said Doc.
Whatever happened to that swell-looking babe in the fur coat used to come over?
She's not been very well.
That's too bad, said Mac. What's she got?
Oh, something obscure. Can't seem to track it down.
I guess with that kind of dough, what do you mean?
I seen it happen so many times, said Mac. You take a dame, and she's married to a guy that's making $25 a week. You can't kill her with a meat axe. She's got kids and does the washing. May get a little tired, but that's the worst that can happen to her. But let the guy get raised to $75 a week, she begins to get colds and take vitamins.
That's a new theory of medicine, said Doc.
It ain't new, hell. Just use your eyes. Guys gets up to 100 a week, and this same dame reads Time magazine and she's got the newest disease before she even finished the page. I've knew dames that can give doctors cards, spades, and big casino about medicine. They got stuff called allergy now. Used to call it hay fever, made you sneeze. Guy that figured out allergy should have got a patent. Allergy is... you get sick when there's something you don't want to do. I've knew dames that was allergic to dishwater. Married guy starts making dough, he's got a patient on his hands.
You sound cynical, said Doc.
No, I ain't. You just look around and show me one well dame with her old man in the chips.
Doc chuckled. You think that's what happened to my friend?
Oh, hell no, said Mac. That's big stuff. When you get dough like that, it's different. She got to have something that don't nobody know what it is. She can't have nothing common that you can take salts for. She goes around puzzling doctors. They stand around her and they shake their heads and they scratch and they never seen nothing like her case before.
I haven't heard you go on like this for a long time, said Doc.
You ain't been in the mood to listen. You think them doctors is honest?
I haven't any reason to doubt it.
Why?
I bet I could fix rich dames up, said Mac, at least for a while.
How would you go about it?
Well, sir, first I'd hired me a deaf and dumb assistant. His job is just to set and listen and look worried. Then I'd get me a bottle of Epsom salts, and I'd put in a pretty little screw cap thing, and I'd call it moon dust. I'd charge about $30 a teaspoonful, and you got to come to my office to get it. Then I'd invent me a machine you strap the dame in. It's all chrome, and it lights colored lights every minute or so. It costs the dame $12 a half hour, and it puts her through the motions she'd do over a scrub board. I'd cure 'em. And I'd make a fortune, too. Of course, they'd get sick right away again, so I'd have something else, like mixed sleeping pills and wake-up pills that keep you right where you was when you started.
Doc said, thank God you haven't got a license to practice.
Why?
As a matter of fact, I don't know why, said Doc.
How about preventive medicine?
You mean how to keep 'em from getting sick?
Yes.
That's easy, said Mac.
Stay broke.
Doc sat silent for a while. He glanced at the starfish and saw the reproductive fluid beginning to ooze from between their rays.
Say, Mac, he asked, did you come over to try to get something out of me?
I don't think so, said Mac. If I did, I forgot what it was.
I'm sure glad you got over it, Doc.
Got over what?
Oh, them goddamn supplopods.
Look, Mac. Sudden anger welled up in Doc.
Don't get any funny ideas. I'm going to write that paper. I am going to La Jolla for the spring tides. All right, Doc, all right. Have it your own way.
But back in the palace flophouse, Mac reported to the boys, "Seemed like he was better, but he ain't over the hump yet. We got to help him not to write that goddamn paper."
Chapter 17. Susie Binds the Cheese. Susie was light on her feet. She was up the stairs and knocking on the door of Western Biological before the snakes rattled. Doc called, "Come in," without looking up from his microscope. Susie stood in the doorway. She held a gigantic flop cake in one hand and carried a paper bag of canned beer in the other.
"How do you do?" she said formally.
Doc looked up.
"Oh, hello. For God's sake, what's that?"
"A cake. Joe Elegant made it."
"Why?"
Doc asked.
"I think Fauna told him to."
"Well, I hope you like cake," said Doc.
Susie laughed.
"I don't think this is a eating cake. This is a looking cake. Fauna sent you some beer."
"That's more like it," said Doc. "What's Fauna want?"
"Nothing."
"That's funny."
"Where shall I put the cake?"
said Susie. Now Doc looked at Susie, and Susie looked at Doc, and they both had the same thought, and they burst into laughter. Tears streamed from Susie's eyes.
"Oh, Lord," said Susie. "Oh, Lord."
She laughed with her mouth wide and her eyes pinched shut. Doc slapped his leg and threw back his head and roared, and the laughter was so pleasant they tried to keep it going after its momentum was spent.
"Oh, Lord," said Susie. "I got to wipe my eyes."
She put the cake down on top of the rattlesnake cage, and hysterical rattling filled the room. Susie jumped back.
"What's that?"
"Rattlesnakes."
"What you got them for?"
"I take their venom and sell it."
"I'd hate to live with a bunch of dirty snakes."
"They're not dirty. They even change their skins. That's more than people do."
"I hate 'em," said Susie, and she shuddered.
"You wouldn't, once you knew them."
"Well, I ain't likely to get to know 'em," said Susie. "They're dirty."
Doc leaned back in his chair and crossed his legs. He said, "You know, this interests me. Snakes are cleaner than most animals. Wonder why you call them dirty?"
Susie looked at him levelly.
"You want to know why?"
"Sure I do."
"Because you run Fauna down."
"Wait a minute," said Doc. "What's that got..."
"I did not."
"You said Fauna's trying to get something out of you. She just done it to be nice."
Doc nodded his head slowly. "I see. So you got even by calling snakes dirty."
"You got it, mister. Nobody don't run Fauna down when I'm around."
"It was just a joke," said Doc.
"Didn't sound like no joke to me."
"Why, Fauna's one of my best friends," said Doc. "Let's have a can of beer and make peace."
"Okay," said Susie. "You make the first move."
Doc said, "Tell Joe Elegant it's an incredible cake."
"Got marshmallow frosting," said Susie.
"And tell Fauna the beer saved my life." Susie's face relaxed.
"Okay," she said. "I guess that's okay. Where's the opener?"
"Right in the sink back there."
Susie brought the two punched cans to Doc's work table.
"Say, what are you doing?"
"Making slides. When I started, I put starfish sperm and ova in each of these glasses. Then every half hour, I kill one glass of the developing embryos, and when I have the whole series, I mount them on slides like this, and one slide shows the whole development."
Susie bent over the dishes.
"I don't see nothing."
"They're too small. I can show you in the glass."
Susie backed up.
"What do you do it for?"
so students can see how starfish get to be.
Why do they want to know?
Well, I guess because that's the way people get to be.
Then why don't they study people?
Doc laughed.
It's a little difficult to kill unborn babies every half hour. Here, take a look.
He pushed a glass dish under the microscope. Susie peered in the eyepieces.
God almighty, she said. Did I look like that once?
Something like.
Sometimes I feel like that now. Say, Doc, you got a funny business, bugs and all like that?
There are funnier businesses, he said sharply. She stiffened.
Meaning my business? You don't like my business, huh?
It doesn't matter whether I like it or not. There it is. But it does seem to me a kind of sad substitute for love. A kind of lonesome substitute.
Susie put her hands on her hips. And what have you got, mister? Bugs? Snakes? Look at this dump. It stinks. Floor ain't been clean in years. You ain't got a decent suit of clothes. You probably can't remember your last hot meal. You sit here breeding bugs. For Christ's sake, what do you think that's a substitute for?
In the old days, Doc would have been amused. But now his guard was down, and he caught her anger like a disease.
I do what I want, he said. I live the way I want. I'm free. Do you get that? I'm free, and I do what I want.
You ain't got nothing, Susie said.
Bugs and snakes in a dirty house. I bet some dame threw you over. That's what you're substituting for. Got a wife? No. Got a girl? No.
Doc found himself shouting,
I don't want a wife. I have all the women I want.
Woman and women is two different things, said Susie. Guy knows all about women. He don't know nothing about a woman.
Doc said, this guy is happy that way.
Now you're happy, said Susie. You're a pushover. If no dame's got you, it's because no dame wants you. Who the hell would want to live with bugs and snakes in a joint like this?
Who'd want to go to bed with anybody that's got $3? Said Doc cruelly.
Susie said icily, a smart guy. A real smart guy. He's got what he wants. Seems to me I heard you're writing a great big goddamn highfalutin paper.
Who told you that?
Everybody knows about it. Everybody's laughing at you behind your back. And you know why? Because everybody knows you're kidding yourself. You ain't never gonna write that paper because you can't write that paper. You're just sitting here like a kid playing wish games.
She saw her words go home as surely as though she had watched arrows drive into his chest, and misery and shame overwhelmed her.
I wish I didn't say that, she spoke softly. I wish to God I never said that.
It might be true, said Doc quietly. Maybe you put your finger on the truth.
Is everybody laughing at me?
Is everybody laughing?
My name's Susie, she said.
Are they laughing, Susie?
They got no right to, she said. I was just fighting back. Honest to God, I was. I didn't mean any of that stuff I said.
I love true things, said Doc. Even when they hurt. Isn't it better to know the truth about oneself? And he asked it of himself.
Yes, I think it is. I think it is. You're quite right. I've got nothing. That's why I built up the whole story about my paper until I believed it myself. A little man pretending to be a big man. A fool trying to be wise.
Fauna will kill me. Susie moaned. She'll wring my neck.
Say, Doc, you got no right to take mad talk from a two-bit hustler. You got no right.
"What's it matter where the truth comes from," he said, "if it's the truth?"
Susie said, "Doc, I never felt so lousy in my life. Get mad at me, won't you?"
"Why should I get mad?"
"Maybe you've stopped a bunch of nonsense. Maybe you've nipped a fool in the bud."
"Get mad at me," she begged. "Here, take a punch at me."
Doc chuckled. "I wish it could be that easy." Susie said sadly, "Then I ain't got any choice." And she shrilled at him, "Why, you goddamn bum, you lousy stinking fool, who the hell do you think you are?"
There was a flutter of footsteps and the door burst open. It was Becky.
"Susie, you're late. The rattlesnakes are here. Come on, get into your tomato dress."
"It's called love apples," said Susie quietly. "So long, Doc." And she followed Becky out. Doc watched them go. He said aloud, "That's probably the only completely honest human I have ever met." His eyes wandered to the table, and suddenly he bellowed, "God damn it! She made me miss the time! The dirty bitch, I've got to do it all over!" And he dumped the contents of the glass dishes into his slop bucket. Chapter 18. A Pause in the Day's Occupation. Not the least important and valuable custom Fauna brought to the Bear Flag was the little time of rest and contemplation in the ready room after work and before sleep. Grievances were brought out and inspected, quarrels were settled, and all the little matters of interest and despair were turned over and examined for their actual value. Then praise or blame were assigned, and plans for improvement were laid out with lore and tact learned in other fields. Fauna warped and nudged and bunted her young ladies toward good nature and kindliness, which are the parents of restful sleep. It was not unusual for light refreshments to be served, and on occasion the young ladies' voices joined in song, "Home, Sweet Home," "Old Black Joe," "Down by the Old Mill Stream," "Harvest Moon." Dog watch in the ready room was a medicine to weary nerves and frayed bodies. The Bear Flag was short-handed the night of the memorial meeting for dead members sponsored by the Rattlesnake Club of Salinas. Helen and Wisteria were doing 60 days for a lady fight that is still discussed with admiration in Cannery Row. When the last rattlesnake had gone and the big front door was closed, the girls wandered wearily into the ready room, sat down, and kicked off their shoes. Becky said, "One of them rattlesnakes tonight called us an institution and a landmark." Agnes said acidly, "We get a few more like Susie and it'll be an institution, all right. I got an uncle in an institution. He goes right on fighting the Battle of San Juan Hill. Where is Susie?"
"I'm right here," said Susie, entering. "I was getting that cracked record out of the jukebox. Am I pooped? Let's put it in the sack."
"Before Fauna gives us good night? You crazy?" Mabel said. "She'd bust a gut."
Becky sighed. "What a night. This is one time the group rate paid off. Them rattlesnakes ain't turned a trick since midnight, but they sure was active."
"They were going fine until they run out of liquor," said Mabel. "That new stuff Wide Ida sent in must be made of jumping beans."
Susie said, "I figure if that short one told me once more how his little boy cut a worm in two with a shovel..."
"Oh, you got it too, huh? Know what the little bastard said? Only 4 years old, too. He said, 'I cut a worm.'"
"Now, if he said he cut a camel, I could listen to it 3 or 4 times.
"That bald one?" said Mabel. "Did his wife have an operation?
They turned her inside out. Sounded like they was pelting her. He got crying so hard I never did find out what she had.
A malignant artichoke, said Becky. I made him say it slow.
Agnes asked,
Say, who is this guy Sigmund Kai they were singing about?
Never heard of him, said Becky. I once knew a dame said she was the original Frankie, though.
I've personally knew three original Frankies, said Mabel.
Susie, you got to stop arguing with the customers.
Susie said, If that's the live members of the Rattlesnake Club, the dead ones is what I call dead. I could scream twice at a rubber lizard and then the hell with it.
Fauna came out of the bedroom office and stood in the doorway rubbing lotion into her hands. She had changed to a peach-colored dressing gown. She said seriously,
Young ladies, you can make fun of the rattlesnakes if you want to, but if you ever get in the administration end, you will welcome good, solid citizens like them. Why, there was some very important people here from Salinas. I give them a good rate, but you notice there's no busted furniture. Them free-spending sailors last Saturday night cost me $85 in repairs. That nice boy give Becky a $5 tip, but he busted two windows and run off with the deer antler hall tree.
Susie said, God, I'm sleepy.
Fauna said sharply,
Susie, I got one rule. Never let the sun rise in a crossword or an unbalanced book.
She scratched her nose with a pencil. I just wish there was more rattlesnakes, she said.
I wish there was more dead members, Susie said.
That's a cross word, Susie, said Fauna. The birds are chirping happily, so why can't we? Now let's relax.
Who wants a beer?
Becky said, If I say I want it, I'll have to get it for everybody. My dogs are tired.
You know what I was dancing? A quadrille.
Fauna said dryly, I seen you. I'll have to give you some lesson, I guess. You done a cooch quadrille. It ain't your feet should be tired. After all the posture lessons I give you, you still dance like a harlot.
What's a harlot? Becky asked.
A whore, said Mabel.
Oh, harlot, huh? Said Becky.
Agnes said, Fauna, I want you should tell Susie when she goes on errands she should come back. She stayed over at Doc's about an hour while the rattlesnakes was really active.
Susie asked, Say, Fauna, what's wrong with Doc?
Wrong? Ain't nothing wrong with him, said Fauna. He's one of the nicest fellows ever lived in Cannery Row. You'd think he'd turn bitter the way everybody hustles him. Wide Ida gets him to analyze her booze. Mac and the boys throw the hook into him for every dime that sticks out. A kid cuts his finger on the row, and he goes to Doc to get it wrapped up. Why, when Becky got in a fight with that woodman of the world and got bit in the shoulder, she might have lost her arm if it wasn't for Doc. Show her the scar, Becky.
Susie asked, Don't Doc never come here?
No, he don't. But don't let nothing ever give you the idea he's strange. There's girls goes in there with fur coats and stuff, and he plays that churchy kind of music. Doc's all right. He gets what he wants. Dora said every girl made a play for him. I put a stop to that.
Why'd you do that? Susie asked.
I'm saving him, that's why. You look at them gold stars over there. Every star one of my girls is married well.
Susie said, Who marries hustlers?
Now that's a bad attitude to take, Fauna said coldly. That's the kind of attitude I try to discourage. You look at that third star from the end over there. I admit she's kind of snooty, but why shouldn't she be? She's a reader in a big church in San Luis Obispo. I tell you, my girls marry and marry well.
Susie said, What's that got to do with Doc?
I got him staked out for Miss Wright, said Fauna. Someday I'll draw a bead on him.
Hell, said Susie. He said he don't want to marry nobody.
Watch your language, Susie, said Fauna.
And then, with interest, she asked, How'd you get along with him?
We got in a hassle, said Susie.
He made me mad, and I made him mad. All them goddamn bugs, and a paper about nervous breakdowns and devilfish. Someday a guy in a white coat's gonna tap him on the shoulder. Fauna said, don't believe it. Why, some of them bugs he gets as much as $10 for.
Not a piece, said Susie.
Fauna went on, why, he takes an old beat-up cat he paid a quarter for, and he shoots red and blue and yellow paint in it, and gets $15 for it.
Why, for Christ's sake? Susie asked.
Susie, if you don't watch your language, I'll wash out your mouth. Now you just get up and bring the beer for that. You're an ignorant girl, but I'll be goddamned if I'll let you get common.
Susie went out, and Fauna said, I wonder if she might be for Doc. She's got an awful big mouth. She'd talk her way out of an apple dumpling.
Susie came back with a tray of beer bottles. Becky said, Fauna, why don't you read Susie's horoscope?
You mean stars and like that? Said Susie. What for?
Becky said, to see if you're going to marry Doc.
Susie said angrily, I like a joke as good as anybody, but don't get rough with me.
Becky said, who's rough?
I don't believe that crap about stars, said Susie, and you lay off talking about Doc.
He's been to college. He's read so many books he can't count 'em. You lay off talking about him and me.
Fauna said, that'll be enough, miss. You see that chart? Just look at them gold stars. And look particular at that gold star that's got a gold star on it. That young lady is married to a professor at Stanford. He's got about 1,000,000 books, and she used to take all day Sunday figuring out Jiggs and Maggie.
You know what she does? If somebody points to all them books and says, does the little lady read all of them? She just smiles kind of quiet and mysterious. When they ask her a question, you know what she does? You can learn, Susie, if you just pay attention. She repeats the last 3 words anybody says, and first thing you know, they think she said it. Why, her own husband thinks she can read and write. You get smart, Susie. Doc don't want no dame that knows as much as him.
What would he have to talk about?
Let him tell you for once. Don't tell him.
Becky said, she won't. She loves to shoot off her face.
She damn well better learn to shut up, or she won't be no gold star, said Fauna. That's a good idea about the horoscope. When's your birthday, Susie?
February 23rd.
What time was you born?
God knows, but I think it was leap year.
Agnes said, I bet she was born at night. I can always tell.
Fauna went into her room and brought back a chart and pinned it to the wall. She brought out her schoolroom pointer again.
Now this here's you, Pisces. That's fish.
Susie said, you mean I'm fish?
You're fish, said Fauna.
I don't believe a goddamn word of it. I don't even like fish, Susie said.
Why, hell, I break out if I even look at a fish.
Don't look at him, then, said Fauna. But if you ain't lied about your birthday, you're fish. Now, let's see. Fish is to Jupiter, carry 2 in the Saturn, and 3 left over in the house of
I don't believe none of it, Susie said.
Fauna looked up from her figuring.
Tell her some of that stuff I'd done, Mabel.
Mabel said, I seen her do wonderful stuff. I had a pup one time. Fauna, she done a horoscope on him. It says on that pup's 3rd birthday, 10 o'clock, he's going to explode.
Susie asked, did he?
Well, no. Something went haywire with the chart, I guess. 10 o'clock on that dog's 3rd birthday, he caught fire. I was taking a lemon rinse.
You could use one now, Fauna said.
What caught him on fire? Susie asked.
He just caught. Spontaneous something or other. He was a pretty good dog, but we wasn't very bright. Never could housebreak him. He used to wet on Joe Elegant.
Susie said, I bet Joe Elegant set him on fire.
That's a lie, said Mabel. Joe Elegant was in the hospital.
Suddenly, Fauna clapped her hands to her brow.
God Almighty!
What is it? Said Becky. What's the matter?
Fauna said impressively. Susie, you know what you're going to marry? You're going to marry a cancer.
Thought you caught it, said Susie. I didn't know you had to marry it.
Don't get funny, said Fauna. Cancer, that's a crab, and that's also July. Now you just think, who works with crabs and stuff like that?
Becky said, Joe Anguro's fish market?
Fauna exploded. Duck! And if his birthday's in July, he's a gone goose. Agnes, when's Doc's birthday?
I don't know. Mac's gonna ask him.
Well, we'll have to find out. Can't let him know why we want to know.
Agnes said, Mac'll find out. Mac's used to hustling Doc.
Well, I want to know right away. Now, you young ladies get some sleep, you hear me?
You know what's coming in today?
Fauna stuck the pencil in her hair.
A great, big, fat, juicy destroyer. And you know what day it is?
The girls spoke in a chorus.
Lord God Almighty, they said. Payday!
It took Fauna about 5 minutes to put up her hair, and then she was ready to make her final rounds to see that the garbage was out and all the lights turned off. In the dark ready room, she saw a glowing cigarette.
Who's there?
She called.
Me, said Susie.
Why ain't you in bed?
I was thinking.
Now I know you'll never make a hustler. What you thinking about, your horoscope?
Yeah. You like Doc, huh?
I put the knife in him. He made me mad.
Why didn't you let me handle it? Said Fauna. I think I could maybe get him for you.
He don't want a wife, and if he did, he don't want nobody like me.
People don't know what they want, said Fauna. They gotta be pushed. Why would guys in their right mind want to get married? But they do.
Maybe they fall in love, said Susie.
Yeah, and that's the worst that can happen. Know something, Susie? When a man falls in love, it's 90-1 he falls for the dames that's worse for him. That's why I take matters in my own hands.
How do you mean? Susie asked.
Well, when a guy picks out a dame for himself, he's in love with something in himself that hasn't got nothing to do with the dame. She looks like his mother, or she's dark and he's scared of blondes, or maybe he's getting even with somebody, or maybe he ain't quite sure he's a man and has to prove it. Fella that studied stuff like that told me one time, a man don't fall for a dame. He falls for new roses, and he brings his own new roses. The best marriages are the ones pulled off by someone that's smart but not sucked in. I think you'd be good for Doc.
Why?
Because you ain't like him. You want I should try?
No, said Susie. I wouldn't sandbag no guy, especially Doc.
Everybody sandbags everybody, said Fauna.
Susie said softly, you know, you was right, Fauna. I was 16 when it happened. But you know, he talked to me like I was a girl. I can't even remember how it sounds. Talk to like a girl.
Fauna put her hand on Susie's shoulder. Maybe you'll find out again, she said. If I pull this off, I'll put a new ring around your gold star. You ready to go to sleep now?
I guess so, said Susie. Let's don't sandbag Doc.
Susie waited until Fauna had rustled to her bed, and then she crept out the front door. The light was still burning in Western Biological. She went across the street, past the streetlight, and up the stairs, and she tapped with her fingertips. Doc didn't answer. She opened the door and saw him sitting at his table, his eyes red, the glass dishes in front of him. He looked very tired, and the skin above his beard was gray.
You're working late, she said.
Yes, you made me ruin the first set. I had to do it over. It takes time.
I'm sorry. Doc, you got to write that paper. I don't know nothing about it, but you got to write it.
I think you were right the first time, he said. Maybe I can't.
Sure you can, said Susie. You can do anything you want to.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I don't want to.
I want you to.
What have you got to do with it?
Susie blushed and looked at her fingers for an answer.
Everybody wants you to, she said. You'll let everybody down if you don't do it.
He laughed. That's not a good reason, Susie. She tried another tack.
Everybody hates a coward. If I'm a coward, whose business is it?
You gotta write it, Doc.
I won't.
I'd help you if I could.
What in the world could you do? Her face flamed. Maybe give you a kick in the ass. Maybe that's what you need.
Why can't you leave me alone? He said. And then, God damn it! You've done it again. You made me pass over the time.
You done it yourself, said Susie, you lousy stiff. You blame everybody else. You done it yourself.
Get on back to the whorehouse, he shouted. Go on. Get out.
In the doorway, she stopped and looked back.
God, how I hate a fool, she said, and she slammed the door behind her.
In a moment, there was a tap on the glass.
Go on home, Doc shouted.
Mac opened the door.
It ain't Susie, it's me.
You were listening?
No, I wasn't. Say, Doc, would you say a piece of property on Cannery Row was a good investment?
No, said Doc.
She's quite a dame, said Mac. I thought you said you weren't listening.
Listen, Doc, nobody in this block listening, but everybody heard. You know, they say there's three good reasons for marrying a hustler.
What are you talking about? Said Doc.
Mac counted on his fingers. Number one, she ain't likely to wander. She's done all her experimenting. Number two, you ain't likely to surprise her or disappoint her. And number three, if a hustler goes for you, she ain't got but one reason.
Doc watched him, hypnotized.
What reason?
She likes you.
Good night, Doc.
Sit down. Have a drink.
I can't. I gotta get some sleep. I got work to do tomorrow.
Night, Doc.
Doc looked at the door after Mac had closed it. The grain of the unpainted pine seemed to squirm to his weary eyes.
Chapter 19 Sweet Thursday 1
Looking backward in time, you can usually find the day it started. The day of Sarajevo, the day of Munich, the moment of Stalingrad or Valley Forge. You fix the day and hour by some incident that happened to yourself. You remember exactly what you were doing when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. There's no doubt that forces were in motion on that Thursday in Cannery Row. Some of the causes and directions have been in process for generations. There are always some people who claim they felt it coming. Those who remember say it felt like earthquake weather. It was a Thursday, and it was one of those days in Monterey when the air is washed and polished like a lens so that you can see the houses in Santa Cruz 20 miles across the bay, and you can see the redwood trees on a mountain above Watsonville. The stone point of Fremont's Peak, clear the other side of Salinas, stands up nobly against the east. The sunshine had a goldy look, and red geraniums burned the air around them. The delphiniums were like little openings in the sky. There aren't many days like that any place. People treasure them. Little kids are likely to give off tin whistle screams for no reason, and businessmen find it necessary to take a drive to look at a piece of property.
Old people sit looking off into the distance and remember inaccurately that the days of their youth were all like that. Horses roll in the green pastures on such a day, and hens make a terrible sunny racket. Thursday was that magic kind of day. Miss Winch, who took pride in her foul disposition before noon, said good morning to the postman. Joe Elegant awakened early, intending to work on his novel, on the scene where the young man digs up his grandmother to see if she was as beautiful as he remembered. You will recall his novel, The Pie Root of Oedipus, but Joe Elegant saw the golden light on the vacant lot and a dew diamond in the heart of every mallow leaf. He went out in the damp grass in his bare feet and scampered like a kitten until he got to sneezing. Miss Graves, who sings the lead in the butterfly pageant in Pacific Grove, saw her first leprechaun up in back of the reservoir. But you can't tell everything that happened every place on that sweet Thursday. For Mac and the boys, it was the morning of truth, and since Mac was to hear the brunt of it, his friends cooked him a hot breakfast, and Eddie mixed real bourbon whiskey in the coffee. Hazel polished Mac's shoes and brushed his best blue jeans. Whitey number one brought out his father's hat for Mac to wear, a narrow-brimmed black hat, the crown peaked up to a point. Whitey number one's father had been a switchman on the Southern Pacific, and this hat proved it. He stuffed toilet paper in back of the sweatband until it fitted Mac perfectly. Mac didn't talk. He knew how much depended on him, and he was brave and humble at the same time. The boys put the carefully printed tickets in his hand and saw him off, and then they sat down in the weeds to wait. They knew Mac was quaking inside. Mac went down the chicken walk and across the railroad track. He passed the old boiler and rapped on the rusty pipes in a wild show of bravado. In front of the grocery, he studied a display of screwdrivers with loving intensity before he went in. Cacahuete was behind the counter, studying a copy of Downbeat. He wore a purple windbreaker with gold piping. A lean and handsome boy, he had the wild and sullen light of genius in his eyes. "Hi," said Mac. "Jar," said Cacahuete. "Joseph and Mary around?" "Upstairs." "I want to see him personal," said Mac. Cacahuete gave him a long, surly stare, then went to the back of the store and called, "Tio mio!" "What do you want?" "Mac wants to see you." "What about?" "Who knows?" Joseph and Mary came down the stairs in a pale blue silk bathrobe. "Morning, Mac. These kids have no manners." Cacahuete shrugged and took his downbeat to the top of the potato bin. "You're out early," said the patron. Mac began with ceremonial seriousness. "You ain't been here long, Joseph and Mary, but you made a lot of friends. Good friends." The patron inspected this statement and made a note of its slight inaccuracy. Still, he had nothing to lose by going along with it. "I like the people around here," he said. "They treat me good." His eyelids lowered sleepily, which meant he was as alert as a radar screen. Mac said, "In a little town you get kind of hidebound. But you're a man of the world. You've been all over. You know how things is." The patron smiled and acknowledged his wisdom and waited. "I and the boys want to ask your advice," said Mac. "You ain't likely to get a wild hair." A vague uneasiness stirred in the patron. "What's it about?" he asked tentatively. Mac drew a deep breath. "A smart businessman like you might think it was silly. But maybe you've been here long enough to get it. It's a sentimental thing. It's about Doc.
I and the boys owe Doc a debt we ain't never going to be able to repay.
How much? Asked the patron. He upended a broom and tore out a straw with which to pick his teeth.
Take a powder, he said softly to Cacahuete.